In today's episode of the Durango Joe's podcast, we have a special guest on to talk about his story as a coffee shop founder. We dive into how the military has given him a warrior's approach to entrepreneurship, how he and his wife had to completely rebrand in order to rise above, and how they've scaled their business from an online-only coffee company to a three-pronged venture with brick-and-mortar cafes, wholesale contracts with Sportsman's Warehouse, and a healthy online retail presence. Welcome to the Durango Joe's podcast, where we believe everyone deserves a smile, a warm greeting, and a great cup of coffee. I'm your host, Trevor Ogborn, and as always, I've got Joe Lloyd on the mic. Joe, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing all right. It is snowing outside right now. We got about 3 inches last night, so I've kind of been up since 4 a.m. plowing the parking lots at all of our locations in Durango. So
you've got those owner responsibilities.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's good. It's going to be a great day.
Well, awesome. So, Joe, I really quick want you to think back a little bit, back to when you were, let's say, 17 years old. What were you up to when you were 17 years old, Joe?
Real fast answer. No good at all. I was, I was a junior in high school. So really I was doing sports and hanging out with girls. That was it, you know, and just having a good old time. So yeah, that's what I was doing when I was 17.
Well, by contrast, our guest today, we've got a special guest today. When he was 17, he was actually enlisting in the Army for what I understand would become a 21-year career with the Army. And after retiring from this Army career as a decorated veteran, he and his wife went in to start a coffee business together.
That's right. We have Carl Churchill, co-founder of Alpha Coffee, with us today. Carl, welcome to the podcast, buddy.
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be on it. It's good to see you and Trevor again.
Yeah. Just to give you a little background here, Carl is the co-founder of Alpha Coffee with his wife, Lori. They've scaled their business to offer wholesale coffee to businesses like Sportsman Warehouse. And then they've opened up a couple brick and mortars locations in Utah. And the good thing here about Carl and Lori is that they have donated over 19,000 bags of coffee to deployed military troops through their program called Coffee for Troops. So that's a pretty awesome thing. So Carl, we want to hear your story today. You and I met probably, how long has it been? Four years ago?
4 years ago, yeah.
Okay. You know, and being in the coffee industry, you know, you meet a lot of other coffee shop owners along the way. And we're really stoked to have Carl share his story and what they're doing in Utah and Salt Lake. And so, yeah.
Well, like you said, Joe, you guys at Alpha Coffee, you guys have donated, it's over 19,000 bags of coffee over to American deployed troops. Do you know what is the most up-to-date count? Do you have that?
Yeah, so it's 19,238, I think, as of this morning, so.
Oh, wow. And climbing.
Yeah, here's the bottom line is that I deployed multiple times, always drank crappy coffee. And so when we started this, Lori and I sat down and we wanted to have, you know, a portion of our business be a give back program. And, you know, initially we started online out of our basement, you know, shipping out to people's homes. So we said for every order we ship out, we'll ship out the equivalent of a cup of coffee to deploy troops. And, very quickly, the demand for coffee donations outstripped our sales model. And we said, you know, what the hell? We want to, you know, we formed this to try and support the troops. So, you know, that's what we did. And we kind of threw the one cup for every order out the window and just said, we're going to send as much as we can while still staying in business. So
that's amazing. Well, and because your mission is so tied up with this great cause of helping support our military and stuff like that, I want to go back to where that sort of starts and comes from in your own life. So I understand that you kind of grew up as like the quintessential Army brat in a sense. You were born abroad to an Army father and your family is full of veterans. So I want to know from your standpoint, what was it like growing up surrounded in that Army lifestyle?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So my dad and my stepdad are both Vietnam veterans. My mom was German. My dad met her in Germany. I was born over there, raised there the first 3 years of my life, and then came to the States and got naturalized, became a naturalized citizen. And then every time my dad went to Vietnam, my mom would say, hey, let's go back to Germany. And we'd wait out his year tour in Germany. I grew up kind of half my life in Germany, and in between Germany, there was Panama and this mostly the South in the US, Korea. You know, I just was all over the place, grew up all over the world on military bases, environment. I always like to say my football coaches were Airborne Rangers. My judo instructor was a Green Beret. And, you know, I had a lot of teachers. Like, in eighth grade, my history teacher was a Marine Corps Vietnam vet. You know, he would bring into it his experiences in war and that sort of thing. And so I just grew up thinking like, well, you know, I want to test myself in battle. I want to be a warrior too, because I was surrounded by all these mentors.
Trevor, when I met Carl, I could totally tell that this guy had been in the military, you know, because he's pretty serious dude, you know, he's pretty focused. And when he came to visit us, he was laser focused on what he wanted to know. Wasn't beating around the bush or nothing. But what I found about he and Lori was they're super kind people. And I think that's what connected us with Leanna and I. And just after they left, we thought, man, these guys are super kind. They have a mission. They have an idea of where they're going, but they're really kind people. And I remember sharing that with Leanna, and she totally agreed. But Carl, I understand your wife, Lori, also grew up in the military, right?
Yeah. Well, so Lori's dad was a Vietnam vet as well. He was in the Air Force, and he ended up getting out of the Air Force after Vietnam and then became a sheriff's deputy up in Washington State. I met Lori after my first combat deployment to Central America, and she had grown up, you know, around military guys, so she wanted nothing to do with me. You're going to be gone in a few years anyway. But for me, I was head over heels in love the minute I met her. And so I was persistent. And that was 33 years ago was when I met her, about 33 and a half years ago. And we've been married for 31. We're going to be celebrating our 32nd anniversary this July 29th. So best thing that ever happened to me.
Oh, wow. Congrats. I think given that your history, Carl, suffice it to say, you probably didn't really grow up thinking, oh, I'm going to own a coffee shop or be an entrepreneur or something like that some days. Like, you saw the military as your career path. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, you know, when you're young and you join, I didn't join with the intention that I was going to stay 21 years. I just wanted to go with myself and see what I was going to do. I was lucky in that my sergeants, my NCOs looked at me and said, this kid's pretty sharp. He's got some leadership skills. And, you know, it was post-Vietnam, all volunteer Army, and they were looking for leaders as the Army started to build back up. And so I was told to apply for a scholarship. And so I applied for an ROTC scholarship on something called the Green to Gold program in the Army. So I started as a private, applied when I was a PFC, a private first class. I got my scholarship and came to the University of Utah to go through ROTC and then commission as a lieutenant. But I would, you know, coffee was something I grew up around, having a German mom. Like, anytime anybody comes over, it's like, hey, I'll put a pot of coffee on. You know, and you'd sit at the coffee table in the living room and, you know, have some coffee and catch up with neighbors and that sort of thing. And so there were always military wives over at the house because their husbands were, you know, in Vietnam. So there was always a pot of coffee going in the house. And so I grew up around coffee, but never had this idea of, you know, someday I'd want to start a coffee shop.
Now, I know Lori too grew up you, like you said, in Tacoma, up there in Seattle, the Pacific Northwest, the coffee capital of the world. So I'm wondering if that's where her vision came in at all, or if she was the one who really brought that coffee piece into your life. Because I also can't imagine the coffee you were drinking, and I think you spoke to this a little bit, that you were drinking in the military was particularly noteworthy by any means.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. Yeah, Lori is she's a Washington girl, and, you know, home of Starbucks and the whole second wave of coffee, and then the third wave after that. Yeah, it was a few things. I mean, I think that for Lori and I, when we were stationed over in Germany in Europe, anytime I was employed, we would jump on a train and we'd be like, where do you want to go this weekend? You know, let's take 4 days and let's go to Paris. And so we'd get off the train in Paris, find a pension to stay in, and we'd order some crepes and a cafe au lait, a French press in the afternoon. We traveled in Italy. We started really experiencing that cafe culture and those, you know, drinking espresso for the first time and really falling in love with quality coffee. I will say that my first introduction to amazing coffee was when I was deployed to Central America. We were drinking crap coffee at our base, but I was working with special forces units, and we would go out and we would meet with our Salvadoran, Honduran, Guatemalan counterparts. And the comandantes would be like, hey, would you like a cup of cafe? And, you know, so I would drink this Central American coffee and go, oh my God, like, where did this coffee come from? This is amazing. Like, you know, it was nothing like the Folgers we were shoving down our gullets to get up in the morning at the mess hall, you know. That was like my first experience with really great coffee. And then those experiences in Europe and yeah, Lori's family got involved in coffee roasting, and members of her family did. And so we ended up, you know, really starting to appreciate quality craft coffee. And that's kind of where, you know, during the recession was when we were trying to figure out what our next step was. We were literally drinking some of the coffee that my brother-in-law Josh had roasted. And we were like, man, this is so good. You know, got this crazy idea. What if we just like, I'm always like on the cutting, maybe bleeding edge of things. I'm like, hey, you know, more and more people are ordering stuff online. This was 2010. There was this little company called Amazon. And I was like, we could get online and we could sell this quality coffee, you know, and people are starting to want, just like craft beer and, you know, quality wine, people want quality craft coffee. And so that's kind of how we started. It was both of us and, you know, this understanding that life's too short for bad coffee, you know? So let's be a purveyor of great coffee.
That's a great story of how, you know, you guys decided on coffee as your avenue for setting up a business. But how did you come up with the name Alpha? What was behind Alpha?
You know, that's a good question. When I went to basic training, I was in Alpha Company. So, you know, the military phonetic alphabet, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta. And we were Alpha Company. So whenever we saluted somebody, we'd say Alpha, Alpha, best of all, first to fight and last to fall. And so that was something that I remembered. And I was in other units. I had a Delta Company when I was a company commander. I was a long range surveillance company commander. And Alpha to me always was like the best, you know, the alpha wolf or, you know, the alpha dog. And it's like, it's number one, it's the first, it's the best. And so, you know, we started talking about like Alpha Coffee, like this is the best coffee out there. And we have the best service, the best coffee, the best atmosphere. And so that's how we kind of came up with Alpha. And, you know, our logo, for anybody who checks it out, is, you know, people either love it or hate it. we've got a skull with a lightning bolt and the star in the eye socket. And it was kind of this you know, military patch kind of thing that we did. And we, you know, the skull for us has these overtones of a pirate skull. And we're like, hey, we're like this little pirate ship that's sailing up to the HMS Starbucks, and we're going to board and take over the ship. So that was part of the fun part of developing the logo. So,
oh, that's awesome.
It didn't initially start out as Lock and Load though, right?
Yeah. So when we first started out, we started out the company in 2010 with Lock and Load Java, because in the military, when you're getting ready to roll, you know, when you're like in the morning, it's like, hey, you guys ready to roll? Yeah. Lock and load, you know? So it was literally that you were locking and loading your weapon because you were rolling outside the wire. You were going on a mission. It just was that last thing before you were ready to conduct a mission. And so we thought, well, you know, across all the military forces, people understand lock and load is like, you ready to go? Yeah, lock and load. You lock and load with your cup of coffee in the morning. And so we started out as Lock and Load Java. And then over time, you know, we started having a lot of mass shootings in the United States. You know, people remember where that was really a plague that hit our country. We got caught in the middle of this culture war. You know, full disclosure, I'm a Second Amendment supporter. I own weapons. I also believe in responsible gun ownership. And I understand that there are communities where maybe they don't feel as comfortable with guns, you know, as I do, but I support the Second Amendment. I didn't want people to get hung up, though, on the name Lock and Load Java and have half the country think like, I'm not going to support this company. And so we started thinking about, like, what should we do, you know, to change the name Lock and Load Java, or should we change the name? And, you know, at the end of the day, what we decided was it started percolating, like, you know, I think we've got the best coffee out there, and I feel like we give great customer service, and, you know, we want to retain that military thing without being caught between, you know, people on the left were posting on our Facebook page, like, a human skull is a logo, seriously. And then people on the right were like sending us pictures of aborted fetuses and saying, you should post this. We've got to end abortion. And we're like, hey, we're a coffee company, guys. So we wanted to step out of that line of fire. And as we thought about it, we're like, you know, let's focus back on the coffee. And we've got the best coffee there. So Alpha Coffee was born. So that's how we sort of migrated from Lock and Load Java to Alpha Coffee.
And how was that transition? Because that's a pretty major thing to be faced with in terms of having your brand just so tied up and suddenly politicized, not by your own choice, but at the hands of other people. So what was that transition like after you switched to Alpha Coffee, and how much do you attribute that to where you're at today?
Yeah, dude, it was, it's a major thing to basically completely rebrand your company, to change your name. I mean, it's everything from the mundane of securing the URL to applying for a trademark on your name, to making sure that other people aren't using it. You know, I mean, it's this whole thing. Plus, you've got to completely repackage everything. And you've got to change your Facebook name. You've got to change your Instagram, your Twitter handle, all of that stuff. It's just, it was definitely changing the engine while you're flying the plane, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I'll say that is probably the best thing we ever did. In terms of our fans, we maybe lost like 10% of our business because they politicized it and said, oh, well, you're caving in or whatever. But we really, the vast majority of people were like, I love the new name. I love what you guys stand for. I love that you kept your logo. And it really opened up a lot of people to us who previously would not have been as open to trying our coffee and to becoming customers. So it was a really scary move. You know, making that decision was something that a lot of people cautioned me against. And I could tell you probably 24 people that said, you know, it's going to ruin your business. you just have to have faith in yourself and in your gut. If it feels right, if it feels like it's the right thing to do, you know, I really embrace the warrior ethos, and it's like, don't be afraid, you know, take chances. It's the only way that you get ahead and make calculated decisions. And, and it's just what we decide to do. And ultimately it was a great move, and we're really happy with it.
So Carl, what you find out, I think, like you said, you find out a little bit about yourself and your brand, because the fact is, Carl, Alpha Coffee or Lock and Load, it's really about, at the end of the day, about the people behind the coffee. And
for sure.
And I think you changed your brand, you changed the name, but you and Lori at the end of the day are still the founders of Alpha. And what bleeds through your brand is your heart. And when people find out who you are, when they know you, who you are, they're going to follow you as much as they do the name. And so I think that's huge for any, you know, business that's out there. If you have to change your name or whatever it is, I hope, you know, you have a stronger feeling behind that brand, you know, where people know that you do care. And I think knowing that you guys care about people in general is really why people follow you.
You're absolutely right, Joe. At the end of the day, it's who you are that comes through. Yeah. I'm not a social media guy. I grew up in an era, I always joke around and say, if I had showed up to my high school buddies with like a picture of me working out at the gym and said, hey guys, check out this photo I took this weekend of myself working out at the gym, they would have said, dude, what is wrong with you? Like, are you kidding me? And so I grew up in an era, and I still believe, like, you don't draw attention to yourself. You know, you just do your thing and you set that example. But, you know, the young people on our team are saying, no, you've got to, like, a lot of this is you and Lori. So you guys got to be part of our social media. You got to show people what we stand for, what we believe in, because that's what you're trying to convey in social media, is who are you as a company and what do you stand for? You're absolutely right. I mean, regardless of what your name is, it's really who you are and what your heart is and what your mission is for your company that ultimately will come through and ultimately is the way people connect to you.
And I think that's why you're successful, buddy.
I was just going to say too, the 10% of people, like, it, you look at 10% of a business, and that's a big hefty chunk that can hurt. But I think what I'm hearing is the 10% of people that you may have lost in that rebrand were 10% that really didn't actually get you and what you were about. And by shedding them, you opened up this whole other side of the business that now resonated more broadly and deeply with the right people for you.
Totally 100%. And, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to do what's right for you and what's right for your business. You know, we had renewed support and even more support, and we ended up having an even larger audience. So for us, it was a great move for us to make, and we feel really good about it. And again, our mission didn't change. So one of the things we do is we publicize our mission statement. We put it right in our lobby. We have all of our new employees memorize it, you know, their first week here. And it's four simple bullet points. And it comes from my military background. You know, it's like, know what the mission is and make it simple so people can remember it. It's awesome coffee, first and foremost. The second thing is be a warrior. And that's serving others. That's taking pride in what you do. It's working as a team for success. It's a lot of things. And then it's have fun is the third one, and give back is the fourth one. So awesome coffee, be a warrior, have fun, give back. And that's who we had been as Lock and Load Java, and that's who we were as Alpha Coffee. So there was no change really other than the name.
So I don't think a majority of coffee businesses start out with this online retail model. So I do want to dive back a little bit into that. Why did you guys decide to start out online only? What sort of challenges did that face? And how did you build that brand through that online platform?
Yeah, it's a great question, Trevor. The reason, so I'll take a step back. When I got out of the military, I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I started working for startup companies because I felt like in startup companies, you really, it feels like the military. You're a small team, you have a mission, you're all working together towards a common goal. And that sense of mission and that sense of camaraderie with your team is really what I loved about the military. And so I was in a software startup company in the late 2000s, and we had a lot of success. We literally had a $10 million offer on the table for the company, and my partner turned it down. And then 6 months later, the recession started, and the recession was construction mortgage based. So our company went from $10 million worth to slightly less than zero in about a year's time frame. And so Lori and I found ourselves, for the first time in my life since I was 12 years old, I was unemployed. And, I was trying to figure out what to do, and the recession was getting worse and worse. And I think I mentioned before, we were, Lori and I were drinking coffee, sitting down, figuring out what the next step is. And I said, well, what if we had this online business and we sold coffee? And I was like, literally, we don't have to pay rent anywhere because we've got our basement. We can do it out of the basement. And, our overhead's going to be low. We'll collect the money up front, then we'll ship, the business model seemed to make sense to me, and it did. But there was a lot more work to it than just building a website. And, you had to create a brand. You got to get out there. You got to let people know who you are. And 10 years ago was a lot more difficult. Nowadays, you can get a Shopify site, you can be up and running within a couple of days. It's not as difficult. Back then, there was a lot of heavy lifting trying to figure out all the details. But, I'm a make it happen kind of guy, a never quit kind of guy. So I just did the research and, figured out my battle plan and just executed it. And Lori was with me every step of the way. And our two kids were cheap labor, you're getting this for your allowance. You're working for your allowance in the business. Yeah. And we just, we slowly built up, and it ended up taking longer than we thought it would. I always say you need the runway to be twice as long to get lift on your business, because you're optimistic. You're an entrepreneur. You're like, we're going to make this happen. And in 2 years, we're going to be making so much money. So it took longer. I ended up getting other jobs on the side and working nights and weekends and lunch periods. But we made it work. And I guess about when we went out to visit you guys, I committed to go full time in the business. And we were moving out of the basement and doing the coffee shop. And the way that came about was, people, because we're in Salt Lake City, Utah, and because we have four world-class ski resorts within half an hour of our home, a lot of people would be like, hey, I order your coffee and I'm coming out to ski, at Alta or Snowbird, and would love to swing by and see you guys, would love to come by the warehouse, and, the warehouse is in our basement. And so we started to think like, maybe we do need to start thinking about moving out of the house. And other people were saying, dude, your coffee's so good, you ought to open up a coffee shop. So Lori and I talked about it, and we said, yeah, let's let our house be our home and not be everything. And let's open up this brick and mortar where we can sell coffee out of the front and pack and ship it out of the back. And that's how we, that's how we did it.
So in that evolution from the online to the brick and mortar, you underwent a couple other kind of key moments. We talked a little bit previously about your involvement with Man Crates and getting some exposure from that. And then later on Sportsman's Warehouse. So I don't know if you want to spend any time telling us a little bit about how those deals came about and how they've helped grow your brand and your exposure as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So as I mentioned, we start out online, and part of the way that we grew our online business was, and it wasn't really intentional, but vets would reach out to me and Lori and say, hey, you know, we're a small veteran-owned business and we're doing this event, you know, could you guys help us out? Would you be willing to donate some coffee, or would you be willing to help us publicize it and that sort of thing? And so, you know, I've always been of the mind like to give freely to other people, not with an expectation of something in return, but it just makes me feel like a good human. You know, it's like what you're supposed to do, right? Help other people. And so we were doing that with a company. So they were doing an event at a ski resort in Vermont, and we sent them out like, I think 20 or 30 bags of coffee for them to set up a little coffee bar out there for their business. And they're called ID Me. They verify that somebody has a military background, that they're a veteran. So early in their evolution, they were doing this to draw attention to the fact that they could, you know, the services they offered. And so we sent them out coffee, just say, hey, anything we can do to help another veteran-owned business be successful, we're happy to do it. They were the ones that introduced us to ManCrates. So ManCrates is an online, quote-unquote, gift baskets for men online retailer. And they have a coffee crate that comes in an ammo can, and it's got like a little carabiner mug and like a Clif bar. And so we were a really good fit for them. They reached out to us, and you know, early on, they just had a ton of success with us. And that really got us into the wholesale side of things and started getting me thinking, you know, I'm a military guy, so I like redundancy. I like backup plans. I like, you know, spreading out risk and that sort of thing. So for us, I always say Alpha has three legs to the stool. We have our brick and mortar coffee shops and retail. And then we have our online business, which now includes Amazon and our online web sales. And then we have our wholesale operation where we sell to other retailers and that sort of thing. And you're right. This last year, we were able to get in with Sportsman's Warehouse, and that kind of came through the coffee shop. I mean, some of their execs came into the coffee shop to grab coffee and have breakfast burritos. And they were like, oh my God, this place is awesome. And we love your mission to give back to the troops and to donate to veteran charities focused on PTSD. And so they love your coffee. I want to get it for my employees. Do you guys have like an office coffee program? And that fit right into our wholesale. So we started doing that. And then the discussion evolved to where they said, you know, hey, how about having you in some of our stores? And so we've put displays in 11 of their stores, did a 3-month trial where we've just added 5 more stores. We're going to go another 3 months and then we'll figure it out. And you know, my goal is 5 per quarter until we're in all 120 stores that they have. And it's been going really well. I mean, their Alaska locations just got wiped out, and it takes 2 weeks to get stuff up there because they send it in a big shipping container. And so, you know, we're super excited to see how many people have really bought into the brand and our mission and are going to Sportsman's and grabbing our coffee.
Well, cool. Hey, I got another question. I mean, as far as now that you've got the stool, that's the three-legged stool, what is your primary focus? I mean, obviously you do have a couple of brick and mortars now. You've got the online sales and your wholesale. So where's your focus right now?
You know, one of the things I learned in the military, one of the first things you learn as a young officer is they have this sort of standard training thing where they say, you're attacking a defensive position and you're a company commander. You've got 3 platoons and you've got one in reserve and two that are attacking the defense. One is having a little bit of success. The other one is really running into resistance and is taking casualties. Where do you commit your reserve to? What do you do? And the tendency is, I'm going to commit where I'm taking casualties and I'm going to overcome that strong point and then we're going to win. But the lesson is, you reinforce success. You go for where you're having that breakthrough and you bypass the strong point, and then you can get behind or you can flank them and then you can, quote unquote, win the fight. So one of the things we've always said is reinforce success. And it doesn't mean that you don't give any oxygen to those other parts of your business, but what you want to do is to continue to reinforce that success. And we also start out every year with sort of a battle plan for that year and how it fits into our long-term strategy. So for this year, we believe that we can grow significantly in our online sales. So we're doing a major renovation of our website. We've created a budget and we're putting a major emphasis on growing our online presence. Having said that, one of the biggest successes we've had really has been our coffee shops. So our coffee shop here, it's been 4 years. We've doubled in size since we first started. And, you know, we're getting super crazy busy now. And we've really built a brand within the mountain community, within the CrossFit and the veteran and the law enforcement and all of that in the Salt Lake Valley. And so our focus this year, our primary focus will be to open up 2, maybe 3 more shops this year. It just depends. Everything's been delayed with COVID, but we'll definitely be opening up our 3rd shop this summer downtown Salt Lake City. And then we have 2 other ones that will potentially open in the fall. And then we've got a couple more after that lined up for next year. So our focus right now is to grow that brick and mortar presence, while also sort of our secondary goal is that growth of that online business. The wholesale is going well and will continue to grow with Sportsman's and other veteran-owned coffee shops that contact us to buy their coffee from us and serve Alpha in their shops. And we see a lot of that and we've seen that grow, but we're not putting a lot of effort and focus on that B2B portion. We're really focused on that B2C, and the brick and mortar is going to be our primary focus there.
So I'm curious how much you and Lori and the leadership of the team has had to change as you've added more brick and mortar, because building these stores, you've obviously got to now bring on staff and stuff like that, stuff that you maybe didn't need or certainly couldn't afford to use back when you were first starting out with the online and you were just in your basement packing coffee boxes. So I'm curious how that dynamic has changed as you've started to bring on more and more people into your teams. And also, how much does your military background really help whip stuff into shape?
That's a good question. Yeah, I would say that, you know, it's a major shift. When we opened the coffee shop, it was Lori and me on the line, you know, pulling shots, making drinks, steaming milk, talking to customers. And that, you know, that first year was, it was tough. It was, you know, 14 plus hour days. It was constantly trying to train new people. It was trying to connect with customers. You know, when you went home at night, you'd sit down and answer all the emails you didn't get to during the day, and you would pack the orders first thing in the morning before you opened the shop that came in online, and it was difficult. You know, we were making, you know, if you counted our hours, we were making less than minimum wage. So that was a difficult year and it was a challenging year, but it was also sort of that crucible that led us to the next step. And I think that, you know, I've always believed that if you really want to be successful, you have to understand your business from the ground up. You know, you have to understand what your frontline troops are experiencing. You know, you have to understand what works and what doesn't work and what's critical for us. You know, one of the things we do when we interview people, we count how many times the person smiles during that interview. It's a little bit of a challenge now that we're doing COVID interviews with masks on, but you can tell by the sparkle in their eye whether they're smiling or not. And so that, you know, that's one of those things where we recognize that the experience that the customer has, that awesome coffee is what we call it. And part of that is just their interaction with, you know, when they walk in, hey, welcome to Alpha. Is this your first time? Let me know if I can make any suggestions for you. How's your day going? You know, that smile, that engagement, that's what's different between us and Starbucks. For us, it's that genuine engagement. So we hire people based on personality, we can teach them the coffee skills. You know, being there and doing that ourselves for the first year was critical for us to understand what it took. And so I think that's really, really important. But it's just as important if you want to grow beyond that, to be able to step back and say, okay, in the beginning, good people make a difference. But as you get bigger, processes and consistency and, you know, standard procedures, those are critical. And I knew that from the military. So we use all kinds of military techniques and ideas. One of the things we do is called SOPs, standard operating procedures and checklists. So our baristas, they know that we have dailies, weeklies, and monthlies. And dailies might be something like, you know, making sure that all of the cups are restocked at the end of the day, or that the bathrooms are cleaned every single day. And monthlies might be, you know, we need to vacuum the coils on the refrigerator. And weeklies could be something like the plants on the need to be watered, you know, this amount. And so we have, when people come to work for us, they always tell us, I really love it because you guys have checklists and you have everything set up. So I don't really need to think about what I'm supposed to do next. I just go through the dailies, the weeklies, the monthlies, and, you know, it's all set up. And that's just like the military. It's standard operating procedures. We do it this way. We have consistency and we do maintenance as we go and we clean as we go. And so, you know, finding people that buy into our culture and that have that, you know, friendliness and all of that, that was critical for us to be able to step back and take on those roles of, for Lori and I, we've gone from being in the business to running the business. Now, I also believe it's important every once in a while, you know, a few times a week, we jump in, we're on the line, you know, I'm on my point of sale, I'm talking to customers, I'm, you know, cooking breakfast burritos in our TurboChef ovens, I'm, you know, helping tamp or do whatever, you know, pulling shots, I'm taking the garbage out. Like Joe was saying, you know, he was plowing lots, you know, it's like, you got to lead by example and you got to be in there and you got to regularly be visible to the troops. But you also need to understand that you can have the most impact on the culture by focusing on those things that help you run the business well. So our roles are shifting. Lori is our primary barista trainer, and I'm really managing our shop managers and our, you know, we have a director of sales and marketing now. We have what we call our inventory and distribution manager. And we just hired somebody who's our chief of operations, and we're getting him up to speed on everything. And so I spend a lot of my time mentoring people on the team and managing them now. And we're building a leadership academy that our shift leads will go through. You know, for us, one of the things I learned in the military is, you know, you have your generals, you have your officers, and they do their thing. But when it comes down to winning battles on the ground, it's the sergeants who are taking those young privates and putting them under their wings and saying, hey, follow me. I'm going to teach you what you need to do to make it through this mission and to be for us to be successful as a team. So we want to build this sort of leadership academy for those first line supervisors, those shift leads that might be 19 to 22 years old. They've never had real leadership experience in their life or very little of it. They're still learning. And what we're finding is when we teach them those skills, they love it. They love it. They rise to the occasion and we teach them how to counsel people. You know, this particularly this generation has challenges with confrontation, face-to-face communication. They're like, I don't want to sound like I'm bossy. I'm like, dude, that's your job, is it? But I said, you're not being bossy. What you're doing is you're providing guidance so that you guys are successful as a team, so that you have, you know, that you achieve success. And so they're looking for you to be a leader. They're not looking at you and saying, wow, you're being bossy. You're telling me what to do. And so teaching that skill set, that's our next big focus, is really building that leadership academy for our frontline supervisors. So
I love it. That's awesome.
It's obvious, Carl, that the military has had a massive impact on your life, not only in the 21 years or so that you served, but in your entrepreneurship and your ownership of a business with your wife. And that's awesome. And I appreciate, you know, all the good things the military has obviously done for this country. And thank you for your service. And as we wrap this thing up, what would one thing you could tell our audience that would serve them well if they're starting their own business?
Yeah, sounds good, Joe. And first of all, it was an honor to serve, and I appreciate that very much. The military has had a huge impact on me, and I think there's a lot of lessons learned there. I talk about the warrior ethos. You know, that's what we really believe in. And a lot of people think the military, it's like, oh, I shoot guns and I blow shit up, and you know, that's what the military is. But really, the military for me was about serving others, you know, and that's that warrior ethos. The warrior ethos is, you know, I'm a big fan of the Stoics and that philosophy of, you know, I'm going to be disciplined and I'm going to take on hardship and challenge because it gives me purpose. And so that warrior ethos is really to serve others and to willingly take on the tough things. And so that kind of rolls back into, if you're starting a coffee shop and it's just about, I want to make money, you're not going to be successful, because, you know, if it's just about making money, you could do that for the short term, but to build a lasting business that connects with people, people are going to become loyal to your business and are going to be with you through pandemics, through recessions, through thick and thin, because they have a relationship to who you are and what you stand for. And that relationship is developed across the counter as you make coffee for them. We, you know, we're serving more than coffee. We're serving a hot cup of awesome and a really amazing experience. We have people who come in and they say, this is the highlight of my day when I see you guys in the morning. You know, it's like, you're always so friendly. You want to know what's going on in my life and that sort of thing. And, you know, we're busy, but we still make those connections. We still talk to people and we remember their names and we remember what their drink is. It's got to be about more than just making money, because if you want to make money, if that's all you want to do, then, you know, follow the Starbucks model, like buy mediocre coffee, roast it really dark, so all you taste is the roast, and then put lots of sugar in the drinks and charge people a lot of money. And that's how you'll make money. And, you know, that will work for a little bit. But the only way that model works is when you're on every corner and you're convenient. And that's why people choose you, is out of convenience and, you know, a consistently mediocre cup of coffee. And that's their business model in a lot of ways. If you want to start a coffee business, it's got to be about more than just making money. That is where we've had success. And I think the other thing is discipline and, you know, thinking ahead. Before we opened our shop, we came out and visited you guys because I knew you guys had been so successful and we had heard so many great things about your business and what you guys were doing at Durango Joe's that we wanted to come and see. And we, like you said, you know, I came up, I had a mission. I'm like, these are the things I want to know about. Like, I don't want to waste your time. You're being incredibly generous with us by taking time out of your busy day and managing this really successful business. And so I wanted to do it in a very methodical way. And so, you know, again, it was, you guys are just awesome people. And that's what really resonated with us. And the kindness that you showed us and what we learned from you was really, really helpful. So thank you for that. And hopefully this podcast can, this is kind of my way of giving back to you guys and other entrepreneurs is I want to tell you what I've learned so that when you charge that hill, you know where the machine gun nests are. You know, you got to watch your money. You got to hire good people. You got to be involved in the business. You know, all of those things are really important. So yeah, thank you again to you, Joe and Trevor and all the people on your team for everything you've done to help us be successful.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. We definitely admire what you're doing and continue to do and look forward to seeing where it continues to grow.
We appreciate your time today and your openness. Man, I can see you guys are going to continue to be successful.
A special thanks to Carl Churchill for joining us for this episode. And thank you for listening in. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the Durango Joe's podcast anywhere you like to listen so you never miss an episode. You can also find us at our brand new Facebook page. Just put Durango Joe's podcast into the search bar. The Durango Joe's podcast is published by Durango Joe's Coffee. It's hosted by Joe Lloyd and Trevor Ogborn. That's me. I write, edit, and produce these episodes through my business, Brewed Up. You can find out more about that at the link in the show notes. Durango Joe's. Love people, love coffee.